Let's face it, parenting is the most important job on earth. Every day presents a stack of different challenges, and more often than not, the answer is outside of the box. On this podcast, we will offer proven strategies, interview pioneers in education, give insights into how to be successful parents, and even share our imperfect experiences of being parents ourselves. We're all in on this journey, and we will span the globe to find out what is working and who has the answers. This is the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast. Here are your hosts, Darren McCarthy and Brian Powers.
Welcome, Brian Smedley. Glad to have you on the show. Brian, tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you do.
Hi, thank you so much, both of you, for having me on. So yeah, I'm Brian, and Christina, my sister-in-law, and I run The Elite Competitor, which is all about developing confidence in female athletes on and off their field or their court. So that is what we do, but it's been kind of a journey to get here. So growing up, I, like many kids, played a lot of sports. I think I was on the soccer field at 3 years old and just grew up playing them all. And by the time I got in high school, I kind of narrowed down to the ones that I really liked. And that was volleyball. I golfed and ran. And so I kind of narrowed it down to that. And then volleyball started to win out over time, and was playing volleyball pretty much year round. By the time I was a junior, I was playing club, doing all the things, and loved it. However, as I got older and as I got better, I started to struggle a little bit on the inside, and you probably wouldn't be able to tell from the outside at all. I was a pretty talented player. I was starting to get recruited. By the time I was a senior, I was getting recruited to play in college. And however, what was going on the inside was, I was really struggling with confidence, and I didn't think that I was good enough to play in college, even though I was getting recruited, even though my parents were telling me I was good enough, even though my coaches were telling me I was good enough. I was really internally just thinking, like, I don't know if I can do it. And I don't want to let anybody down. I don't want to let my parents down. Don't want to let my coaches down. And so I just, one day decided at the end of my senior season that I was going to be done playing volleyball. And in my mind, that was a better option for me than going out there playing and competing in college and failing. I was just going to cut it off at the pass. I'll disappoint everyone now to avoid disappointing them later. And the pressure, looking back now, 15 years removed or whatever it is, I can see clearly what it was. But I didn't know it then. I just told everyone, like, I was burned out. I really knew, like, the pressure was just too much. So went to college, as a student. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to be a student here, and I don't need this volleyball thing, right? I'll be okay without it. But I ended up going to a college here in Western Washington, and it just so happened to have one of the best volleyball programs in the nation, Division II volleyball programs. And so, of course, they went to every single game my freshman year. And I was like, oh man, they made it to the national championship. And I was like, gosh, I miss this a lot. So, on a whim, went out and contacted the coach, and I was like, hey, kind of told her my story. And I'm like, is there any way that I can play for you somehow? And she actually offered me a tryout after that, like right after they got back from that national championship, that following January. She was like, come for a tryout, come play with the team. And, I played. She sat me down a couple days afterwards in her office and was like, how do you think you did? And I was like, well, it doesn't really matter how I think I did. How did you think I, this is all about you. And she was like, well, we think that you make a great addition to our team, and we want to offer you a spot as a walk-on, which, for those of you that aren't familiar, a walk-on is like a non-scholarship athlete. It's a spot on the team, but you're on the team though. You're not, you gotta really work for what you get. So, but I was happy to have it. So I joined that team, and, I was back in the volleyball world again, and I'm like, oh gosh, this pressure. Now it's like a higher stage. But, you know, I feel really lucky because the program and the team that I joined and the coach, she highly, highly prioritized mental health and mental training in the program. And this was the first time that I had ever been exposed to the idea that confidence can actually be something that's developed with strategies. And so in her program and, you know, in my experience, she allowed us to explore strategies on how to handle pressure, you know, transforming negative self-talk into positive self-talk, you know, and I was all about it. So I decided like, I'm going to take some sports psychology classes and I'm really going to get into this. And by the time I was a senior, I was a full ride scholarship athlete. I was starting and I was loving volleyball. I was playing the best volleyball of my life and just, like I said, was loving it and didn't have, you know, that pressure was still there and I was performing on a big stage, but I had strategies and skills to be able to feel confident and not feel like I was going to let the world down if I made a mistake. So that's kind of, you know, how I got, you know, to that point. As soon as I graduated, I decided I was going to coach. And so I became a head coach, you know, right out of college. And as we were talking kind of before the show, I pretty much started my first head coaching job and they were like, all right, here's your roster and here's your whistle, go coach them up. And I'm like, all right, we'll do that. And did that and realized that these girls were struggling with the same confidence issues that I was in high school. Like not much had changed. And I still wasn't, you know, although I had, you know, experienced it myself and my own confidence transformation, I didn't necessarily have the skills to be able to teach it. You know, that's a way different thing. Mm-hmm. And so about 5 years into my coaching, I've been coaching for about 10 years as a head coach, but about 5 years in, I was like, I really need to figure this out. This is not about like hitting and passing and serving. Like, this is about that, like it's all those things are useless if these girls can't actually have the confidence to be able to use them like in a game. And yeah. So I got certified as a positive performance mindset coach. And then after that, it was like, you know, there's something here. Like this is where it's at. Like developing confidence in young women is not just, you know, it's not just about winning volleyball games. Like this is transferring way off the court into their lives. And just so happened that my sister-in-law also had a passion for leadership and developing confidence in women. So we joined forces and created our business that we have now, which is you know, developing confidence in female athletes. And yeah, we love it. And half of it is for the athletes, half of it's for the parents, because we know parents, we make a big difference in our athletes' confidence too. So that's a little bit about me and kind of what we've got going.
And kudos. I mean, you walked on a D3 program, you were a coach, but you're working with your sister-in-law. That should be like the top of your
I know, you know, they say like family and business shouldn't mix, but in our experience it's been awesome, you know. And we're going on 4 years, so
yeah, when it works, it works really well.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's what you were saying kind of triggered a lot of thoughts in my head. You know, I was raised by a single mom. Mm-hmm. So you talk about confidence and you know, I have a 10-year-old daughter, and I know Brian has a daughter as well. One of the things I think that young ladies see, or girls as well, is something that looks like confidence, but it's really poor self-esteem displayed in a kind of an outward manner. Right. And so I think, you know, with social media being what it is, you know, just you see these moments in time or whether, you know, it's someone on TikTok or whatever it might be, they get a lot of fame, but there's really a lot of pain underneath. And it sounds to me like you're talking about really doing the work, the real work. Am I right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that was, I mean, social media is, the landscape is way different than when I was in high school. And I, you know, gosh, yeah. I'm when my daughter's three right now, and I'm already like, oh, man, what's coming. But for me, it was that idea of like the performing. And that's what I see on social media too. You know, it's a snapshot and you don't see kind of what's underneath. And for me, and what I see also in a lot of athletes, yes, there's that like performance on social media, but it's a performance in life too. And in their sport, and kind of linking that performance with their self-worth. And you know, I have to be able to do this and like, you know, show this as my persona, and that's what's going to make me confident and give me my worth. Mm-hmm. And then when it doesn't happen, that's where that it's like, oh my gosh, maybe I'm not confident, and maybe I don't know what I'm doing, and you know, it could just go down a rabbit hole.
Right. Yeah, it's not like it's building out confidence in this system is systematic. It's like a formulaic move, so you're building stepping stones along the way. So let's talk a little bit about confidence, like what that looks like when it's the difference between real self-confidence and someone with low self-esteem portraying as confident.
Yeah. We talk a lot about in our programs, in our community, about like real confidence versus fake confidence. And real confidence, our definition of confidence is trust in yourself, trust and belief in yourself. And that comes from, you know, trusting also the feelings and emotions that that we're having. Because a lot of times, and this relates to parents and parenting as well, you know, even as I'm parenting my 3-year-old, you know, validating those emotions that we're having, okay? And obviously, yes, athletes, but all kids. Because when we can trust our own feelings, and we can trust that we have innately like belief in ourselves to be able to make it through whatever is in front of us, that's where confidence comes from. So on the court, in the field, what that looks like is, you know, what I see in athletes a lot is like this big fear of making mistakes, or this big fear of like letting people down. And that comes from, you know, because they don't trust that they're going to be able to handle that emotion of making a mistake, or that feeling of letting somebody down. So they just want to avoid the mistake altogether. You know, they'll hesitate, they'll kind of pull back a little bit. And that's where you see that like lack of confidence, because they're like, well, I don't want to go out there and make a mistake. And then I'm feeling this pressure, feeling this weight of letting everyone down. I can't handle that. You know, I just can't handle that emotion. And so that's why when athletes have the skills to be able to know how to bounce back from mistakes and how to recover, they can go in feeling confident, knowing like mistakes aren't the worst thing that can happen to me. Failure is not the worst thing that can happen to me. You know, I can go in feeling confident. So there's that, you know, just trusting and having that innate belief in themselves that they can navigate whatever situation is in front of them, no matter if it's like, you know, making a mistake in a game or failing a test or like having a hard conversation with a friend. Like they have that innate belief in themselves that they can navigate those situations.
Talk about, so like, I mean, there's a portion of teaching the trigger, like what makes me feel this way, or why am I acting this way? And I'm talking more, like we talked a little before, the younger, you know, especially it starts at a younger 8, 9, 10. You know, a lot of kids are pressured and doing a lot of travel sports these days, you know, girls included. And it's just, how do we answer to that trigger of, I make a mistake. All right, so what's my reaction?
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, on the field, how are you teaching them to deal with
it? Yeah, that's a good question. And that's kind of where this like fake confidence comes into, Darren, that you were talking about. Like, you know, this fake confidence is kind of like the, like, you know, I got it, or like, you know,
yeah,
just kind of this, like, I'm good. When really like, okay, well, really, what are you thinking? Like, are you really good? You know? And so what we teach our athletes, as far as the mistakes are concerned, and backing up from that, you know, as a coach and as a parent, sometimes we're like, just get over it, like bounce back. And athletes are like, how do I bounce back? Like, what is that? You know? And so teaching that innate skill, in our programs, we really break it down, but the basic premise of it is having a routine that athletes do when they make a mistake and they have that feeling of like, oh no, you know, that like, okay, I just made a mistake. Am I going to make more mistakes? Am I going to let anyone down? And that initial response, we recognize it. And then we teach a breath. Okay. So I know it sounds very simple, but teaching athletes how to breathe and people how to breathe is so important for regulating their nervous system and getting them like back to center. So we teach a big deep belly breath. We have athletes say what's called a reset word. And that reset word is found through a process where they identify some of their best playing moments that they've had in their past, and kind of the feeling that they want to feel, the feeling that they had when they were playing their best. And so that reset word triggers like a feeling and an emotion that they want to experience. So reset word. And then on their exhale, they do a gesture. So we work together to come up with a gesture that makes sense for them. So something very simple, like snapping their fingers or, you know, wiping the bottom of their shoe or looking, you know, it has to travel with them. So like, you know, in baseball, it could be like looking at the pitcher's mound or something like that, that triggers them. It's like a physical, like tactical thing that can like remind them, okay, I'm back. I'm regulated. I'm present again. Because when we tell athletes, like athletes, we play our best and we perform our best and we feel most confident when we are in the moment and we're playing in the moment. And so when we make a mistake, and again, this is on the court or the field or not, if we're looking at the past, like beating ourselves up about what we did, we're looking to the past. Okay. We can't do anything about that. And then if we're looking to the future and worrying about like, is that next ball going to come to me? Am I going to make a mistake again? You know, then we're pulled to the future. So that mistake rituals, what we call it, kind of brings them back to that center and allows them to be present. And, you know, when we see an athlete, sometimes like they make a mistake and they don't know what to do. So, you know, they're like, sometimes they get angry or they like turn their back on their teammates or they start crying and they don't have that like emotional regulation to be able to be present. And so that mistake ritual, you know, helps them be able to regulate their emotions in that moment. And a big part of that is recognizing the emotion as it comes, like, okay, and this isn't, I don't need to be scared of this. This is just what's happening, but I have a tool to be able to bring me back to the present and regulate so I can perform. So yeah, that's kind of how we handle mistakes.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've had that experience specifically with my daughter.
Oh, have you?
She was really having trouble with kickball. Right. So mm-hmm. I always look at it from this education, you know, sensory kind of perspective, like what's the environment look like, you know? And then, so she was explaining it and she, every time they had kickball, it was just kind of like something that, you know, she just did not want to do. And then she's doing Taekwondo and the same scenario kind of presented itself. Mm. And to see it in action, basically what I saw was, you know, the presenter of the information, you know, the coach in the room was kind of like looking another direction. And then she gave her like four things to do. Mm-hmm. And she's the kind of kid that wants to, if you give me four things to do, I want 1, 2, 3, and 4, you know, I'm going to do exactly what you tell me to do. But if I'm missing one of those things and you make me put all that on display, then she starts to spin. It starts to spin in her head. And that was kind of the scenario with the kickball, right? The same scenario. So what you're talking about here is actually something, I mean, it really was kind of, it was upsetting, but she's 10, right? So, you know, and it really kind of escalates when it becomes competitive,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think everything we do athletically has some degree of competition, even if we're just doing sit-ups next to somebody else, right? Are we doing it as fast? You know, are we doing it right? Are we, these normal triggers? So you're talking about kind of things that you can do to pull yourself out of that stressful moment and deal with it. And this is a strategy I can give her at 10 in the middle of her class that she can use where she doesn't have to run over to me and kind of figure it all out.
Mm-hmm.
Who's trying to figure it out myself, right? As a parent.
<You know? laughs> That's the problem.
What's really going on here and how do we get to it?
So
I think that's fantastic to have those strategies. I want to step back for a second. Brian and I always talk about ages and stages,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I picture, and I know Brian, you've seen this because I know your daughter, Molly. And they're at this age when they're really young, where the young girls have so much confidence, they'll wear a costume to the shopping center, right?
Right.
Like, yeah. I'm a princess. I believe it. I'm living it. I've got my costume on.
Yeah. Right?
And then they start, you know, then they start to go to, you know, in this case, like my daughter went to soccer, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there were other kids that have been playing since I think they're like one.
Right.
You know, and so you walk out and normally you would see, you know, a six or seven year old kind of, you know, just trying to figure out where's the goal and, you know, what are the rules of the sport? And you got some kids that have been doing this since birth. You know, and they feel like they lose all their confidence. Like the whole balloon just goes away because it's like, well, I can't keep up with that person. You know, how do you work around that? Like, you know, kids that start athletics later, or they're not doing the travel team. You know what I mean? They're not doing it as often. Therefore, they don't feel like they have that inner confidence. And it sounds like that's kind of your story, right? To a certain degree.
Yeah. I actually started playing volleyball kind of late. Like, I totally agree with you. And I see it too. I'm also a teacher, and the first part of my career, I taught elementary PE for 4 years, and now I've been teaching high school for 6 years. And the contrast is crazy. Just like what you're saying, like when those kids, you know, when I was teaching elementary PE, they would try anything. You know, it was like, here's a unicycle. Oh yeah. You know, and like, try get this beanbag. Okay, let's do it. Getting a high schooler to do those things, it's like, who's watching me? And, you know, they won't. So it's like, you know, they have that confidence when they're younger just to try everything and like get exposure, and they love it. So yeah, I see that. And I don't know exactly what happens besides what you're saying. Like, they start to compare themselves and see, like, you know, that socialization of like, where do I fit in? I don't want to stand out. I don't, you know, that's really hard. So the way that we address that and that comparison is, there's a couple of things. Like, first, to focus on yourself, you know, and I know that's a very like simple answer and it's harder to do, but to kind of like gauge and measure your progress based on, you know, what you're doing, what you want, and to kind of realize that like everyone is at different stages, and to kind of focus on that. You know, that sometimes that's just like an overarching like thing that like we just have to kind of realize that we're all at different stages and we're going to focus on our own improvement. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we really also focus on, and I think this is where parents come in and can help with this a lot, is to redirect praise and recognition on process versus outcomes. And a lot of times we focus on the outcomes because that's what we can see. And we see like, okay, who's scoring the points, who is, you know, who's playing like the best, and, you know, comparing like this and that. And that outcome is just like so heavily, there's so much weight on it. And so what we kind of coach parents to do is really find out, you know, what are the process things that are involved in the outcome that athletes want. So for example, an athlete maybe wants to score 15 points in a game, but they're not like skilled enough to do that yet. And so what are the process things that would break down, you know, from there? So that would be like, okay, you need to work hard on defense. You need to hustle on defense, or, you know, we're going to focus on like being a good teammate. Like, what are those qualities that are totally in the athlete's control, that are not outcome based? You know, an athlete can go out and feel confident knowing like, I can, you know, maybe I can't score 15 points, but I know I can hustle on defense, and I know I can like be a good teammate, and I know I can like bounce back quickly from mistakes. So like identifying those things. And so then when parents are, you know, seeing this in their kids, they can say things like, okay, you know, I saw you work hard to get back on defense. I saw when your teammate was struggling, you went up to your teammate and you helped them. So that's kind of where that confidence is developed, because athletes are like, okay, well, I can do that. Like, that's in my control. And I can measure that progress. The other thing parents can do, is, you know, what are the qualities that your athlete has that are just them? Like, what do you love about them that they bring that's not tied to their sport? And I think like, we don't tell our kids enough. I know I don't, you know, just recognizing those things, like, you know, when you walk into a room, like you light up the room, you know, I love your smile. And I love that you work hard and you don't give up, you know, just those qualities that like aren't tied to anything. And, you know, the more that we recognize those, the more confidence is developed, and, you know, not just saying things when that report card comes home and it's all A's, you know, or we mm-hmm. score the game winning shot. And so those are kind of some things that go deeper.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, and we talked about this maybe a little bit offline, was we've become a culture where things are, you know, all the great shots and plays are now culminated in one YouTube video. And our kids are seeing that, you know, whereas like, you know, my age group we were watching that on SportsCenter, and you had to wait for the next SportsCenter to come. Like, we're showing everything like in one fell swoop. They're not seeing the, you know, the failures. They're not seeing that, hey, that player might have struck out three times in that game. Like all of that, you know, think, you know, that culture shift has brought a lot of a feeling of needing to be perfect to the field. Of, you know, I say it all the time with our kids in baseball. It's like, it's a game of failure. You're going to strike out and get out more than you're going to hit home runs and get hits or score runs. It just, I think setting those expectations in a world where the expectations have been lifted significantly, I think is something we need to do. And what would you suggest there? I mean, on that end, having those conversations.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point because you're right. Like we see the highlights of everything. And, you know, Darren, what you were talking about too, with like, you know, comparing, and it's like, how am I ever going to be like that? You know, like I just started playing and I, you know, this is, these are the thoughts that kind of go into athletes' minds. And then they're like, and then this highlight, like, how is that even going to happen? And I think as parents, we can control that narrative too, because I do think that our kids see us as finished products in a way also. And they don't see that, like, yeah, I didn't make the volleyball team when I was a freshman and I struggled. And, you know, they don't see that. Like they see kind of like, no, you got it all together. You don't know what it's like, you know? And so I think what we can do as parents too, is like normalize that conversation of like failure and, you know, struggling, and tell stories of our lives where we have struggled and we have failed, and, you know, that it's not just a one and done, because I think they do see us as like, you know, like we're so disconnected, you know?
It's explaining that grind. Like, I think that's what we miss. And maybe this is where we transition to how like these skills can help and as they become adults and go into the workforce. It's talking about that grind. Like you hear the stories of athletes and yes, you see the good part, but a lot, the best stories are the ones where they talk about how many hours they spent at the gym. Like, you know, you hear stories about Kobe Bryant, how he just never stopped. It's just that work ethic, teaching the work ethic, I think has been.
Well, I mean, the overarching theme in the last three or four segments that we've been talking about is this process versus outcomes. And it's, you know, it's the same. We talk about it in education, you know, where it's not about the report card. It's about all the, you know, the nights that you stayed up trying to figure it out. You know, you're talking about, you know, not just the home runs or the highlight reel, but every day where you didn't make it through. So, I mean, I think that right there is a really good takeaway, that, you know, the process versus the outcome. And you don't get the outcome unless you put in the process, right? I guess where we were going is where, you know, so like when you do, who do you work with? You know, what's that process look like? Do you do it virtually? Do you, you know, are people coming to see you now? How's that been? And how does that process work for you?
Yeah. So right now we're all online. Like many have gone, after COVID, but it actually has worked out awesome. Like it's been great because we were being able to connect athletes from, you know, across the nation. And so how it works is there's a variety of ways that the athletes work with us. The main way is through our 8-week signature program called the Elite Competitor. So we open the program a few times a year. And so what they do, a whole cohort of athletes go through it at the same time. So we start, and each week a new module is released. The athletes watch on their own, but then we also have live meetings almost every week as well during those 8 weeks, where we come together as athletes and we connect, we answer Q&As, we go deeper with the content. And so each lesson, each module builds on one another. So we go, you know, from the beginning, we kind of strip everything down and then build it back up as in a good way. You know, we kind of get to the underlying, like, you know, athletes, like, what do you want? Like, if you were to have anything, perfect vision of whatever you want to achieve, what would that be? And we kind of let athletes go, and we tell them not to be realistic, you know, because a lot of times we let our minds go on like what we want. And And they were like, that's not realistic. Like, I can't ever be that. I can't ever be the starting hitter, you know, and they stop themselves before they even get going. And, you know, there's a lot of limiting beliefs that live there. So we let them like be unrealistic and like create these big, scary goals for themselves. And then, in the next piece, we kind of, go down to like, all right, now we've got these big, scary goals. Like, how do we make them come to life? And, we go through visualization. We help them come up with a daily mindset routine that they're doing, every single day, around affirmations, visualization, and breath work. And then we go into limiting beliefs, reframing self-talk and learning the different types of self-talk, mistake rituals, pre-performance routines, post-performance routines as well, because we know confidence comes through routine as well. We go into perfectionism, as well as stress and stress management. So that's kind of, you know, our program, like that has everything. That's the whole package. You know, they go through those 8 weeks and they go through, with a cohort of athletes and with Christina and I coaching them along the way. So that's kind of, that's our main way. We also have community for parents as well. And we can talk about that at the end, and a lot of resources for parents on how they can help their athletes.
Awesome. And what age group, you know, what age would you say, you know, parents were listening to this, where would you start?
We work with typically 10 to 18 year olds is like our range. We have worked on the outside of both of those. So the youngest athlete I think we've had is 8. And then we work with a few college athletes as well. But mostly the athletes that we have come through our programs, and we work with our middle school to like early high school. And what we're seeing is that is the time, like that middle school time, you know, is that transition and where athletes are kind of losing their confidence. You know, they're having that, like what we talked about, they're like, she was really confident and now she's not. And what happened there, that middle school time frame. So,
yeah. I mean, and the other thing I would say too, only because we're gravitating towards this in my house, is that, you know, yes, there are the traditional sports, but dance is a very competitive, I would say it is a sport. Gymnastics, dance, I mean, and that can often lead to these similar struggles.
And I think, I mean, I don't want to lose this topic of, you know, I think some parents are they're not putting him in the sport for the right reason. Right. You know, and it's there's so many different reasons why you would do dance and why you would do all, you know, taekwondo or whatever, you know, soccer, volleyball. And probably one of the last ones is because I want to find a way to get the scholarship to college.
Right.
You know, and that those percentages just aren't there. You know, and I remember when I was like, when way back in the day when I was doing sports, like, you know, I thought I was good, and then I would go down to the city and play somebody and just get crushed, you know. So it's, you know, it's I think it's a realistic outcome to put your child in to gain confidence and empowerment and, you know, physical fitness and mental well-being, everything you're talking about. But for the other reasons, you know, I think parents need to be way more realistic, don't you, Brianne?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And a lot of times too, this is like, you know, a projection, you know, they're like, well, at the risk of offending anybody, because my daughter is now starting sports and I'm like, oh man, you should see her. She's 3 and she is dribbling that ball. Like I see, you know, we joke about that, but it's, you know, we got to be careful because, you know, what we want for our kids might be different from what they want for their kids. And I see it all the time, you know, with athletes coming through my program. And then I'm also, you know, I've been a head volleyball coach for 10 years now, and I see it all the time. I'll hear parents tell me like, well, my daughter really, you know, she's going to go D1 and, you know, we're going to get her the scholarship. And then I talk to the athlete, and when we do that first activity in that, you know, but what do you want? And nothing in there is about playing in college. And I'm like, this is really interesting, you know? And so, you know, we just have to, yes, like you said, the percentages are so, so low. Like, gosh, I want to say it's like 1-4% of athletes who play in high school go on to play in college. And that 4% might even be high. And so that's not to like crush any dreams, but it's just about like, let's be realistic, because the reason why we want our daughters and our sons in these sports and experiencing this is so that they can have the skills that they take with them for the rest of their lives. And I mean, I'm living proof of that. I feel grateful that I was able to play and get a scholarship by the time I was a senior in college. But really the biggest thing that I pulled from that was not a scholarship. It was the fact that I had the confidence now to be able to do what I wanted to do and create a bit. Now I'm like, I'm creating a business and, have created a successful business. And I look back at that and I'm like, gosh, I really believe it's because of my experience in sports and developing that confidence and those skills and those strategies that I've been able to do this. So you're absolutely right. Like it, you know, we have to shift that focus and that pressure, because the more we pressure our kids to get the scholarship and be this and be that, the more they're going to back off and get burned out. And so it has to be student led.
It's 100%. I often say, like, your child athlete is not your 401k. Like, that should not be your plan for retirement. Because again, like you just said, such a single digit percentage go on to college. And then even a fraction of that go on to professional sport. And it just, should be more about how we, one, that F word, fun, how we having fun and enjoying ourselves, because we're running here, there, and everywhere, and then how are we preparing ourselves for, to be a fully functional adult and be successful in the workforce.
I mean, what a great program, right? So we're actually giving the, you're giving kids confidence, or teaching them how to be self-empowered and self-regulation. It sounds like there's a bit of EQ in here and like all of those things, those foundational skills that they can take wherever they go, And if they become an athlete, fantastic. Then they'll be, an athlete that's, really going to make a difference. Like a Maya Moore kind of personality, I just watched that whole thing. That was amazing. but there's a lot to learn there. So, we're glad to have you on. It was probably a little bit different, for you to go, well, what are we going to talk to these guys about parenting and so forth. But we see parenting as parenting and education, and we see it as, kind of the whole child. Mm-hmm. And no matter what you're talking about from the child development perspective, confidence is the blood that runs through the body.
Right.
And if it's real confidence, it makes a real difference. So it's fantastic what you're doing. We commend you, and we're looking forward to spreading the word.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I'm so passionate about this, and you're right. That confidence, I love what you said, that runs through the blood that runs through the body. That's so, so true.
Absolutely.
Now I know, so Christina Brienne.com is the website, but I know you guys are setting something up specifically for our listeners. So ChristinaBrienne.com/foundation. Maybe talk about, the resources that our listeners can go and take advantage of at that site.
Yeah. So if you go to that, and I'm assuming it'll be in the show notes, so you guys will get it. So this is specifically for your listeners. We have a page set up, ChristinaBrienne.com/foundations. And we have on that site, we have a parent cheat sheet that a lot of our parents have found super helpful. It's called What to Say Before, During, and After a Competition to Build Confidence in Your Athlete. So a lot of times parents are like, well, what exactly can I say? What can I do? And that kind of breaks it down. It breaks down like the underlying principle of what you should say before your athlete goes out and competes to build confidence, what you should be doing during. And I'll give you a hint. It's likely shouldn't be doing much when they're competing. That's letting them compete. And then afterwards, that time in the car is so, so valuable. And that's where a lot of parents kind of missed up, and it sticks with athletes for a long, long time. So we talk about like what the principles are of what you should be, how you should be building your athlete's confidence up in that car ride home, and some example scripts for before, during, and after as well. So that's there. We also have a link to our free community for parents. I go live in there every week for trainings for parents on how to develop confidence in athletes. And then there's, I think, a couple other resources on there for athletes specifically to get started with us.
So. Very cool. Now, we appreciate that. And we'll definitely, like you said, it'll be in the show notes. And we'll make sure that our listeners definitely take advantage of it.
Awesome.
That's right. And if you're wondering if Rhianne practices what she preaches, she's up at 6 this morning taking care of this podcast.
Yes, yes. I would have been here at 6.
we appreciate that as well. And we look forward to continuing the relationship. And some Rhianne Smedley, the elite competitor, ChristinaBrianne.com/foundations is where you'll find all those great resources. We really appreciate you being on with us today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast with your hosts, Darren and Brian. Find them on social media at Sound Foundations for Parenting. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast.